Hi, and welcome to Pod as a Woman. I'm one of your hosts, Eli Olsberg.
I'm your other host, Teresa Lee.
And we're doing a mini episode this week. We were planning on doing a regular episode, but life happened, and now we're doing
4th of July.
It was 4th of July weekend.
Holiday hangover.
So we're doing this. Hopefully, you guys, everyone listening, had a great 4th. And if the 4th doesn't apply to you, just hope you had a great weekend.
I want to say, I might be wrong, but I want to say Ariana Donutgate happened around the 4th.
It definitely happened in a summertime period.
And then she said, I hate America. And yeah. I was like,
which I'm curious, do you think she was like, she.
I want to look up when it happened. She did what?
Well, to me, that situation, I think really. I don't know if she should have. Maybe I'd have to go back to the moment it happened.
What July did it happen? 9th, 2015, baby.
Oh my gosh! It literally is like a day short of the anniversary. What was it, 2015 or 16?
Oops, 2015.
2015. So happy 4-year anniversary to Donutgate. I think she. By the way, like anybody at that age would do that.
Oh yeah, we did that shit all the time. I mean, like it truly. She probably didn't think it was on camera. And she was probably trying to be a little rude. And sometimes you act out when you're like mad or having a bad day. You're just like, I'm just going to say some shit where I'm like, you all sometimes be like, I would never do that or something. You know, do you know what I mean? Someone might be like, I can't even think of an example, but let's say someone folds their pizza in half that you're with and you're just mad. So you just want to push buttons. You're like, I think people who fold their pizzas in half is disgusting. Even if I don't, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't do that now. Disclaimer. But when I was a teen, I did shit like that. And I think Ariana was probably just trying to be like, ugh, people are so gross. I hate America.
Yeah, exactly. I think she was just doing that thing where she's like, we're a unhealthy country. And,
and
I'll be honest.
She looked at
donut. I don't think, and then she looked at the donut. I mean, that's kind of, I go back and forth on it because I'm like, what I go back and forth on is whether she was taking a tax too harshly or if, because I just don't think anybody would apply, like, you know, that was right around the same time Justin Bieber pissed in a, a bucket. Remember that was like a janitor bucket? And people were also like, oh, that's gross. But a lot of it was like that boys will be boys mentality. And I thought what he did would have been way worse. Just to be clear, anybody at that age is a monster.
Sure.
And I say that in a relative term, if anyone listening is falls into this age group, don't take it personal.
Yeah, it's like when kids laugh about like scratching up a stranger's car and you're
right.
Like, yeah, no, that's like hundreds of dollars in property damage.
Yeah, exactly. Like that's way, exactly.
And kids are just like, yeah, remember that time when I like threw a rock through that window? Ah, ha, ha, ha. And you're like, oh no, that's not good.
No, vandalism is bad. Like, so I don't know. This stuff to me is like, I mean, I'll say this, if it was anybody else doing it, and say they were caught, like someone was caught on video pissing in a bucket, in a janitor's bucket, that person would have been in deep trouble.
I'll say I think she had the appropriate amount of backlash because she's since moved on. But I don't think it would have been good to not have any consequences. I think she learned her lesson. She probably doesn't do that now. So you know what I think I would say is the right amount of getting in trouble, having to answer for your actions, having a little bit of people don't like you for a little bit, and then getting over it.
How often do you get? I know. Yeah, that's perfectly right.
Life
yeah.
should be like that. It should never be cancel culture where it's like, we never will talk to you again. It should be like, people think of cancel culture as this thing where it's like, I can't do anything wrong. It's like, no, you can do something wrong and then just answer for yourself.
Yeah. And I think that like, it's weird that people, when it comes to like apologizing, it's like an all or nothing scenario.
Yeah, God.
And I'm like, you can just be genuinely sorry and then move on.
It makes it so that I don't even want to call out when people have wronged me because I'm like, people rush to their defense because they're like, don't cancel so-and-so. It's like, nobody's trying to cancel anyone. Truly, just let them answer for their actions. And then maybe for like an appropriate amount of time, they'll have to feel it.
Yeah.
And then they will move on and become a better person. And the people that they have wronged will also feel better for having heard the words are.
Yeah. And I also think that people don't there's some people who have this argument of like, when I say people, I mean, it's like usually celebrities who say this, they're like, if you apologize once, it could lead to an avalanche of constantly being attacked. And I'm like, I don't know if that's how that works. If you're I don't know. There's also people who like just like are those big like I'll let the work speak for itself, but it's like, yeah, that's art. We're not talking about like a situation where someone pissed in a bucket.
Yeah.
I'm not sure where I was going with that.
You were going to ask me.
Oh, I was just going to ask if you have, when you like get people tweeting at you, like, you know, and actually, or one of those kinds of like things where someone's like, well, what you're saying, I disagree with. Do you even acknowledge it or do you just like move on?
Oh, it depends. It depends on their intention. Because sometimes I get like a good natured person who says something, and, you know, of course I'm human. I'll get defensive and be like, oh, well, I want to stand by the thing I said. But, you know, yeah, I can tell their intention. If someone brings up a point that I never thought of, I will, I'll think about it and then I will process it. But I've never really like apologized. I mean, I'll also just try to think before I say anything anyways. But this it did happen on a podcast where I was talking about Elizabeth Holmes' voice and how I thought it was weird that she was doing this fake voice. It implied that she's a liar because she's lying about her voice from the get-go. And I think I was just trying to make a joke. Like, if someone's doing a fake voice, like, already from the beginning, they're lying to you.
Yeah, yeah.
But then because I had talked about it sounding mannish, which was the word I used, and I own up to that, people thought it was transphobic, which I kind of felt like was a stretch, but I heard it and I said, you know what? I didn't mean to offend. If I offended, I do apologize.
Sure.
So it did take me a moment to be like, because at first I was like, ah, that's not what I meant. But then I thought about it and I was like, you know what? Maybe somebody who's going through that right now would feel like they're trying to pass or something and they feel hyper aware of certain adjectives. And so, and so that's okay. I think I'm lucky to have a big enough platform where the things I say reach so
people,
many strangers that I could offend someone. You know what I mean? Like my friends who know me wouldn't be, but I'm like, that doesn't mean it's not offensive just because my friends aren't offended. So to that question, I would say I do listen. I don't always reply because I'm like, I'll DM or I'll apologize if someone truly was offended on a personal level. But I tend to, I'm also not big enough to get things taken away.
Sure. So yeah. I even think about it where people like engage about if I, like, I just remember last week I posted this whole thing about how, and we've talked about this on the podcast before, but I have this theory that early 2000s pop stars were like, I'm going to elaborate on a short tweet that I did, which is that I think that early 2000s pop stars, specifically ones that were modeled after like the pop punk model. Mm-hmm. So they sang much more ballady accessible pop music, but they dressed like they just got out of a Hot Topic concert, like Avril Lavigne, Ashley Simpson, Fifi Dobson, mm-hmm. Sky Sweetnam, mm-hmm. Lilix. I was naming all these bands and I was like, you know, we failed them because we just were like, oh, this isn't what we want. And so I don't know. I just thought my whole thing is like we as a nation failed them. And that was, it was kind of a, it was like a half joke, but I think it's more of a half truth actually. Like in terms of, so someone responded and was like, oh, Sky Sweetnam's doing fine. She's in a band. She's in a metal band now. And I was like, that's not the point. Like can you, it's interesting. I just didn't respond to it. Cause he's like, I'm like, whether they're all doing fine, Avril Lavigne's doing fine.
Yeah.
The point was more like what a certain, time and place, how that affected a career that could have gone one way when it went another.
Sure.
And so, I don't know. I guess I look at the same thing where I'm like, what's the intent here? And then I just looked and I'm like, this guy's just a huge Sky Sweetnam fan. Like he just is like, it's like a fan account. And, and so I was like, all right, you know what? He probably just wanted to try and get attention to her new band.
Yeah. I got him actually by PETA the other day.
You got what?
Actually,
you got a reply guy
From PETA.
Oh, from PETA.
Because
ooh.
I said, I just made a joke about how I can't wait till I'm wealthy enough to be vegan. And then PETA was like, there are many ways to affordably be vegan. And I was like, you're a bad corporation.
Yeah, that's a total like, they're like, oh yeah, we know you're making a joke, but seriously, here's a pamphlet on how you can
have a plant-based diet. Man, they're bad.
Yeah.
They kill animals. PETA kills animals.
Wait, tell me more.
Or the shelter or whatever. They believe in
euthanizing.
Euthanizing.
Oh, that's terrible.
And then meanwhile, they're like, don't eat, like, I don't know, whatever.
While I agree with your sentiments on cancel culture, PETA is canceled.
PETA's canceled, bitch.
So a couple, speaking of Avril Lavigne, I just bought a ticket to see her at the Greek Theater in September. Very excited about that. And seeing Carly Rae Jepsen next month. Those are my pop concerts coming up. Oh, and I'm seeing Mitski next week.
Wow.
Very exciting. One concert a month for the next 3 months. And then after that, I'm going on a concert hiatus because it's just too much money. I also we're going to talk about a couple things with Ariana on this mini episode. The big one being, hot off the heels. Yeah, this week in Ariana. She was performing REM live and started crying in the middle of the song. And people were like posting videos of it being like, was she really crying? If she needs to, she should remove it from the set list. And then, so I'll read the first half of what she wrote. She wrote on an Instagram post, "Tour is wild, life is wild. I'm grateful for the sea of love I have around me every day and for the people who come to these shows and give all of us every ounce of energy they've got. I'm grateful to work with the best musicians and dancers in the world. I'm grateful for my voice and my team. I'm grateful for this music. I'm grateful for my tour bus driver, Kurt, who bought me pickles yesterday because he saw we ran out. I'm grateful for the opportunity to sing to thousands of people every night. It's a dream come true, no matter how hard it gets or how many feelings come up that are screaming at me to be processed and sorted through one day. I'm grounded by gratitude and promise not to give up on what I've started."
That's really nice.
Do you want to read the second half?
Is this, wait.
It's right after the word started. Okay, it says, I feel everything very intensely.
I feel everything very intensely and have committed to doing this tour during a time in my life when I'm still processing a lot, So sometimes I cry a lot. I thank you for accepting my humanness. I'm not sure what I did to deserve to meet so many loving souls every night, to feel so much love, but I want you to know that it really does carry me through. I feel it and I appreciate it and all of you so much. I'm sharing this because I'm grateful and because I want you to know that if you two are hurting, you can push through and are not alone. It's hard to balance taking care of the people around you, doing your job, and healing, taking care of yourself at the same time. But I want you to know you aren't alone, and I think you're doing great. Love you.
Wow. All right. That's a heavy statement.
Oh, Scooter responded, "You are amazing, Ariana Grande."
Oh, man. And then there's the Scooter thing. so much to talk about. With this one, I am very – well, I think what's kind of interesting about the statement is I do think it's – like I think it's – the things did catch up with her. I think that's part – I think she just kind of like has buried her work – like everything in her work ethic to just like, you know, be very vulnerable but also just really capture this moment by touring – you know, doing a bunch of stuff. And then, so I think that's part of it. I think she was probably having a bad day. And it's one of those situations, I don't know if you've ever had this, where like you are having a shitty day and it's like this small thing, like say being out of pickles when you really want one,
sets you off. Yeah. I worry because there's a little bit of a paradox here. Like she, the whole thing with her second leg of her tour and everybody's like, you know, what do we do to deserve her? She's so tired and she doesn't need to give it to us, but she did. But also the thing that you notice whenever she does do something like that, like give you the tour and a second leg and keep making music, is that she's getting this response, which is like, oh, we don't need this. What do we like? But we're so grateful. But it's a positive response. And so it's almost like she's trapping herself because it's like going to work when you're sick. Like, you shouldn't, but people are always like, oh, wow, she's such a hard worker. She works when she's sick. So then it kind of makes you feel like when you're sick, you almost, like, want to go to work to get that extra validation.
Well, I think also a lot of people go to work sick because they have too much on the line, and if they even miss it, it, like, backs, you know. In this case, you know, she had recently had to cancel two dates because of like a voice issue, I think. Something a doctor told her, they're like, you have to take a few days off. She canceled like some Orlando dates or something, postponed them to November. Mm-hmm. And now I think she's built an entire B tour around that where she's like hitting a couple of the same cities again.
But the reason that's hard, I think, is the way we look at mental health is different than the way we look at physical health. Like a doctor can say, if you don't rest your voice for these 2 days, you can't sing again. And very easily she can cancel her tour and be like, great, I want to sing again. It's a muscle I need to take care of physically. Yet when it comes to mental health, like she posted that brain scan of her trauma, you know, it's more gray. And people are like, well, it would probably do you good if you took a break. But also, who's to say we have no cure for depression and anxiety? So I don't know, girl. Like, no matter what you do, you're going to feel it. So then you just keep doing it. So this is that, like, invisibility of having a mental illness versus a physical illness.
There's this theory when I talk to people about depression and stuff, I've heard a lot of theories that, like, that's really a Western world development. Like, not that people don't have it in other places, obviously. I mean, look, there's...
No, people literally... I have a joke about how my mom doesn't believe in depression. I mean, she obviously does, but it's a different view.
Yeah, but it is seen as, like, a thing that... it's almost like a class issue.
There's also this idea that you can, like, snap out of it, or you can just choose to be happy, or you're, like, reframe your brain. Like, they don't see it as physical, when it totally is. It's, like, chemicals, and it's actually, like... I think it's actually... very similar to an allergic reaction when people are depressed. It's definitely autoimmune related, but we haven't figured out the missing key. But it's your body literally thinking you need to die or you're about to die, and it's shutting down. And that's what allergies are, except we haven't figured out a way to talk about it yet. So,
yeah, I don't know. I think part of depression that people don't realize too is like, I think the reason there's not a cure for these things, or why they're not, more often than not, I think that it's very similar to sleep patterns, where they're just now coming up with studies about sleep where everybody's different. There just really is not a consensus on only certain things. Like, obviously having a phone in front of your face 5 minutes before bed is going to fuck you up before you go to bed. That, I mean, I don't think it takes too deep of a scientific study for that. But I think that what they did start learning is that certain people with sleep, you know, they learned that 30% of the world actually sleeps better during the day, and that they are genuine night owls, and that they're chemically designed to be that way. And that, you know, some people only need 5 hours while some people need 8. You know, there's only like a handful of things where there's a general consensus that everyone agrees with. So my point in all this is that depression and those things, I think, are very similar as well. I think certain people manifested in certain ways, and all those different things I think need to be taken into account. So it's like really impossible to make one statement about depression without looking at the individual.
Right. But I just mean like the fact that she would cancel dates for her voice, but not for mental health, speaks a lot to the way we look at mental health.
Oh, totally. And I often wonder, like, I'm like, man, could she even get like a... Do they even have like therapists by remote or something? Like, how do they?
Oh, yeah. I feel like she's got to have someone with her on the road.
Because there's no way, like, touring that much and having that much responsibility on your shoulder for a calendar year of like touring, you know, being ready for whatever it is. Like, I think that's wild. Like just thinking about that, because I'm like, she's booked literally through the end of the year right now.
Yeah.
Her tour ends here in LA, like right before Christmas. And I'm just like, I mean, look, she's already halfway through the year, but that's a long tour. I mean, when did Sweetener tour start? Like mid March.
Yeah.
And like, so yeah, that's literally 9.5 months. That's people carry babies to term in that time. Like,
you could meet someone at one of her concerts, have sex with them, and then have a child before the end of her tour.
If you did the very first show, if you guys got it on by the time she ends this tour, you'll have to name the baby Sweetener. Thank you, Next Grande.
Oh my goodness. I much love to her. I think she's very strong. I hope that there's people around her who can guide her and help her find the right path, because it's hard when you hear from your fans and they're all saying like, thank you so much, we're so grateful, like,
totally,
even though they say like, we won't be let down, but then you see how positive they are when you don't let them down.
Yes,
it just builds the pressure up even more. It's hard. I mean, I don't know, man, it's hard, but yeah, she's dealing with a lot.
So yeah, so hopefully we wish her the best, and if we could afford to see her again in LA, we would. I'll just put it out there.
What's going on her Instagram? Let's take a look.
That was the most recent one. By the way, what was the picture that was posted with that? Or did she just like...
Oh, it's a picture of her singing.
Okay.
Yeah, that in a black and white picture, singing like head tossed up.
Oh, that's the photo. I did see that. Yeah, yeah.
It seems like it was light.
Should we talk about the scooter thing?
Oof. I mean, yeah, if you want to.
Briefly. Well, it's just, wow. Yeah, I guess we can talk about it lightly because I don't know. There's that whole thing where, like, Scooter reps a lot of famous people. I mean, yeah. It represents Bieber, Ariana, Carly Rae, Demi Lovato just started working with him.
Yeah, he's definitely a giant in the music industry. I'll say this. I don't, gosh, because it, I don't know. It's hard with here. He says, she says, because truth is, I'm not close enough to truly know because it's like,
none of us ever will
know.
Be. Yeah.
But all I can say is this. I mean, like, whether or not, I'm sure both of them lied at some point, but whether or not Taylor Swift was telling the entire truth and knowing her pattern and her past, she probably wasn't. But whether or not she was telling the entire truth, she is pinpointing a very real problem in the music industry.
I agree.
For that, I think that is very brave of her. And yeah, I know you can say what you want. She's a liar, blah, blah, blah. She is very self-gain person. And I love her music and she writes the hits. Yeah. And so I have to say it because I know a lot of our fans also listen to Taylor Swift and are big fans of hers. I do too. But she's just Same. Such an example of like privilege. Which is not always a bad thing. She's using her privilege to shed light on a real issue. And I think what makes me mad about it isn't her. It's just the fact that a lot of people without her position wouldn't be able to fight for themselves. So I, when I see that, it's just almost like triggers me feeling bad about those disenfranchised voices. But I'm glad she's causing change, even though it is in this very like bully kind of way. Because she is a bully.
I think, yeah, I mean, I think whenever anyone's at the top of their game, yeah. That's a real I mean, look, I think overall, I agree with just about everything you said. Like, I think that she, I think she is going after a major issue. And I think we were talking about this a little yesterday at the party we were at, which was that, like, I also think that it's interesting when she does make these waves, she has these changes. And I remember back when, like Kanye and Jay-Z, and you know when they started Tidal with sure. Rihanna, Beyonce, you know they were all like, "Oh, we're gonna offer like a much better service that is an important service, and we're gonna make sure that like artists are paid." That's so you know your money, 25% of your money is going to the artist minimum, yeah. And or 75%, whatever, I forget the exact, you know, because sure. This was so long ago. But that imploded. And I think part of it had to do with just Tidal was not... Spotify really came out blazing with the best algorithm at the time.
Yeah.
And so I think that everybody who chose their allegiances, you know, Drake and Taylor went to Apple Music and all that stuff about residuals. Taylor got the most done. So I agree. I think there's something there about obviously Taylor's privilege versus... Mm-hmm. You know, like other artists.
Yeah, we can't ignore the fact that she's a white girl. Like,
yeah.
And a lot of people want to ignore that because they're like, Beyonce's huge. But yeah, like Beyonce got booked to do the Super Bowl and people rioted. So it's like, we just can't ignore that. And I think, again, it's not her fault. She's born white. You know, like that's privilege.
Right.
And we're not saying don't sing or don't speak out because you're
no,
white.
No, I just think it informs the current situation. Yes. So all this stuff about like...
It brings up a lot of feelings.
Yeah, I think it's what you said. Both of them have editorialized the situation a little. Mm-hmm. To what end, we'll never know. But I mean, you know, like, look, all these people, you know, two of whom are my favorite current artists right now.
Yeah.
Ariana and Carly work with Scooter. Bieber works with Scooter. Demi Lovato just signed with Scooter, who, of course, she's had a feud with Taylor for a long time. That's, you know, the fact that they haven't spoken out in a way that's like, we're working on it or whatever it is, also tells you how they feel about
yeah,
the situation.
Yeah, and I'll also say in the specific situation, it's a business move for both of them.
I would also venture to say that the artists we just mentioned that are repped by Scooter also probably just don't care.
Well, they probably don't care, but again, like they have their own deals.
Right, that's
Taylor
what I mean.
Taylor has a different deal.
Yeah.
And so while Scooter's actions may have been questionable and may have been money influenced, he has a different deal with the others and they have different lawyers and they have different... It's just different. And Taylor's so big where she's losing way more money and yeah. So it's just different. It's hard. It's like...
She's also making way more money.
That's what I mean. But yeah. It's like, it's just different. You can't compare her deal to someone else's deal because the music's just different. I think truthfully what happened is she got a bad deal to begin with and she wants out of it, and this is the only way out is to make it seem like Scooter's the villain. I think the deal was probably bad. It was probably bad, yeah, and it probably was above board. And she was probably too young and naive to like be able to know that. And so she's not wrong. The industry does bully and naive artists into it, but it was all on paper and above board. I don't think that they went behind her back. I think she realized she could change it. She could rewrite history if she got enough people to be mad.
Sure. And I agree. But someone else pointed out, they're like, it's also funny that she puts this whole plea about the music industry and at the end just puts, you know, this is the best way to support my newest album.
Oh, yeah. It's so calculated. I mean, it's all calculated. Like, God, if it were up to Taylor, like, you know, well, I don't want to say this. Never mind. I'll say this off air. I'll tell you.
Fair enough.
I was going to make a joke about it, but something that would probably get me in trouble. I won't.
Yeah. Well, you know, we wish all of them the best. And so what is the last thing we're going to talk about?
I want to talk about favorite Ariana Grande songs that aren't on Sweetener and Thank You Next.
Yes.
I know we've hinted at yours already, but let's actually officially get it out on paper. So
okay.
Should we start with Yours Truly?
Yes. I'll work my way. So we're going to each name.
Singles too, but.
Yeah. Well, so we're going to talk about the three albums that we're not covering on this podcast. Maybe, you know, like right now, the thing was we were doing Sweetener and then Thank You Next. What the future holds, we'll see in terms of how we pursue it. But we wanted to talk about a favorite song from each album, from the other three albums, and also just those albums in general, kind of an overall look at it. So my favorite track off of, so we're starting from the beginning. So we're doing
Yours Truly,
which is her first album. Very good album. We've talked about it before. It surprised me when I first heard it because I was like, damn, this is like, I just couldn't believe what I was hearing. I was like, this is in a league of its own in pop music. And so my favorite song on there is You'll Never Know, which she performed live at the concert we were at as part of her old songs medley.
Did she? I forgot.
Yeah, here, I'm gonna cue it up
cue it up, and then
it's this one.
Oh, yes.
Oh, no, it paused. That's weird. I actually wanted to go to the chorus anyways. Ugh, my fucking Spotify is acting up. This phone has been getting on my nerves. That's my favorite. Oh, hold on. I think it's working now.
Oh, there you go.
It's a very catchy song and very like, it's like just a good quality pop song. I'm shocked it didn't play on the radio.
Yeah, not very many singles from this album.
Just The Way, I think.
Yeah, not many that like a recognition song. And even going back, not really many people went back. And like sometimes you go back and you rediscover. Like,
yeah.
So Spice Girls, I feel like Spice World really was the big song, the big album. And then people went back to Spice.
Yeah, that's true.
And rediscovered some of those songs, but
yeah,
not so much with this.
I think the whole album's really good. There's a few. That's also the album I think that has the most fusion of like this kind of pop with like very classical old, like almost like a Motown-y type of, you know, where she wears her influences of like older singers on her sleeve.
Yeah, I hear that.
What's your favorite on there?
My favorite song on that album is Tattooed Heart.
Ooh, that's a good one.
I'll play a little bit of it.
I need a lot of money.
Yeah. Also, tattoos cost a lot of money.
Yeah.
Through my veins. I feel like this is her, like, I love hearing her in this range, like classic.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It has this very, like, that song has, like, that feeling of, like, you know, you walk into Casablanca, play it again, Sam. You know what I mean? Like, it has this very...
sweet baby girl, breathy kind of, like,
yeah, yeah, almost like a, like you can picture it on like American Bandstand or wherever she, you know, performing it with like a little group of backup singers and you don't see the musicians on screen.
Yeah.
she also, by the way, when I revisited this album last year, when I started to, I was like in between kind of like Sweetener and Thank You Next coming out, I went through this little period where I listened to this album a lot. Mm-hmm. And Baby I definitely got a spike in my listens. And and also on this album she has three
Almost Is Never Enough is also a good one.
Yeah, that's a very good one. Three of her exes are featured on this in some capacity.
Oh,
Mac Miller, which they were not dating at the time, but Big Sean.
Oh yeah,
she played that song, the one she does.
Wait,
with Big
Sean's on this album.
They have a song called Right There. And I think it's the third song on the album, but she played it at the as part of the medley, actually. At that same, yeah. And she, and I think Nathan Sykes is also on this album somewhere near the end. So it's interesting that she works with all of her bows, which good for her.
Yeah, I mean that's probably how she met them and got close to them too.
I like look. I think it's such an insulated business that it seems like everybody handles this stuff pretty maturely. Even at that age, like a lot of people who date in music seem to be okay.
Well, yeah, because it's different than comedy. You can go off and into the studio and just work on an album. Whereas in comedy, to work out your shit, you got to see them.
And yet so many people still do it. So many people still do it.
Every day, bombing in the back of a bar.
I know.
It's not really conducive to healthy emotions.
That's why I stopped dating just straight up stand-ups years ago, because I was like, the few times I had done it, it never blossomed to anything long-term. But I remember with thinking in that period, I was like, if this is just how self-conscious I get with someone that I'd just seen a few, you know, dated briefly, what would happen if I dated someone for 2 years? You know what I mean? Like
Try three.
Yeah, exactly. It's like hard to, I mean, it's also hard to say because you don't know how those relationships, like I know with some people who date when they end the relationship was dead 6 months before, no pun intended. I say that here. Ugh, I feel my heart just dropped using that term. But sometimes the relationship already kind of was past, like they were together for six more months than they should have been, and they were both so over it.
Yeah.
And the breakup was a lot more organic. I've heard that happen before. So it, I guess, depends on the situation there, but
yeah,
you know what?
You're just so vulnerable in stand-up when you're working out your stuff, whereas in music, you can kind of just like go off. You can go to the woods and write an album.
You can truly go off, sis.
Maybe I should do that. Go into the woods and come out with a special.
There's times I think about it. I'm like, what are we doing? And should I move to like just
one of
those
people?
Cities?
I do need people. I need people to be around and bounce.
Oh yeah. Oh, just to be clear, I mean, like, there's part of me that's always like, maybe I should just start over in a new city every 5 years. because like
sounds like a sociopathic
thing. Right. That's why I was like, well, yeah. What am I going to get out of that? Well, I don't know. People move around a lot. That's not entirely true. I think people move because of work.
Sometimes, yes. Yeah. But people who move around every 4 to 5 years, you're running from something. You're running because it takes about 4 years to get to know someone. That's how long it takes to truly know someone.
This is only, by the way, in relationship context. Anything. People mostly have to move because of work.
But that's specific to comedy. People stay in the same city for many decades in
a
lot of other industries. Yeah. Well, I think comedy, it makes sense to end up in LA or New York. But then you see people who move every 4 years. And then what happens when you get to LA? We'll see, huh? If you can't, then sometimes they go back and forth, ping pong, because you are addicted to novelty, or I don't know. Look, everybody's different. I'm not saying everyone's like this, but I have my blinkers on. What's the word?
Your hazards.
My hazard. No, I have. I'm very hyper aware.
You have your guard up.
Yes, because that is a pattern. Leaving a city every 4 years when people have finally begun to know the true you can be a red flag. Not for everyone, but can be a red flag sustain relationships.
I think it depends on the I don't know. I try to look at the individual more than the situation because I don't know. I know people who have to move around a lot just because of I don't know. I mean, that's
7 years is okay. So this is like 7 years to be a New Yorker. I lived in New York for 8 years, and I think I was ready for something new. And that's a normal amount of time to be like, it's about time. I think 5 years, that's around the time when you finally have these deep friendships.
That's true.
And that's when you get up and leave by yourself. There's something, I don't know.
Interesting.
I'm not thinking of anyone particular.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I can't think of anyone I can assign that to.
No, I am thinking of someone in particular. No, well, just kidding.
I see. This whole thing was a projection.
No. No, actually, my therapist did tell me that about the 4 years, and I think about that a lot because I'm like, I look now, if someone you meet doesn't have at least a couple childhood friends or someone in their life that they've been able to sustain a relationship with, it's so easy to be carried up in that honeymoon phase of the first 3 to 4 years of knowing someone. It's so fun and exciting. And then once shit gets real,
you
can but it's also enough time where if you bounce around, you can just be like, oh, our friendship naturally got distant. Nobody really calls it out. But if you look at somebody's relationships, if they don't have any sustainable friendships,
right? Well,
usually a red flag.
Of course. Yeah, that's different. I think that also, for me, when I even hear about people going to the countryside to write an album or go to these they're off grid.
Yeah.
I can't ever do that. I actually write better when I'm in a city and city life is around me because then I know I have an option if I need to get out. There's never been an appeal to me of going to a hotel room for a weekend and banging out a script. I think that's
but what about just banging out?
Just banging out. Yeah, that's a different story. Then I'll go on a staycation. I don't know. I never because here's what I mean by that is road trips, even those, if they pass the 3 hour mark, I hate them. I can't fucking stand them. I don't think it's beautiful driving. I've been on a tour bus for quite a while. I was on tour for three months.
You did that for a while, yeah.
So I remember that was fun because I had a group of people and we were in essentially a moving living room that had beds, that had bunk beds. So that made it tolerable because you could end up in a city. But the other problem is you also lose signal there and you just have to watch satellite TV for a little while. I got a lot of work done that way, but most of the driving was overnight anyways. And most of the time I was just sleeping, I would wake up in a new city. So
I love that. I love the idea. I love being on trains. I love being on buses. Well, I don't love buses, but I love the idea of being on a thing and you're looking and you're going somewhere. And
I took a train to San Diego once and I was like, and that's from here. That's only 2 hours. And I'm like, that's too much. Okay. So
too much. Okay. Let's talk about my everything.
My favorite song, this is a tough one, but the winner for me is Love Me Harder.
Yeah. It's really between that and One Last Time for Me.
I'll tell you why.
Well,
I'll just tell you why it wins for me. At the time, I thought The Weeknd's first three albums, Trilogy, I got into those before it became Trilogy. I discovered it. So I don't know if you know his whole thing. His first year in 2011 when his albums came out, he dropped them for free as mixtapes.
Yes, I remember the mixtapes. I thought it was earlier than that.
No,
I remember being freshman or sophomore year of college and people were talking about The Weeknd.
He might have put out songs, but they officially came out because...
Because he dropped a mixtape. He was still kind of underground. Well, he wasn't really underground, but he was still cool to say you liked.
Yeah. First mixtape. Well, he had songs from the very first mixtape that came out before the mixtape itself came out. And
I think it was 2008 or something.
No. He was, really? he wasn't even, I don't even think he was.
2011 was the year I graduated college.
I definitely
knew about him while I was, I remember at a college party. Someone thinking they were really cool, so being like, "Oh, do you know The Weeknd?"
He started uploading stuff in 2010. It says here.
Oh, that's so interesting. Did he?
He also, Well, I remember because
he's Canadian. That's funny. Yeah,
and House of Balloons came out in, let's see, March 2011. I'm only looking this stuff up for our dear listeners because I discovered the first album I discovered was Thursday. That was the second, which is considered, I believe, of the three, the most underrated. But that came out in August. And then I remember I discovered that. And then Echoes of Silence came out literally 3 weeks after I discovered him. I was obsessed with those three albums. I thought they were so lyrically, they were fucking a little beyond my scope of partying and fucking and all that of how he talked about him. But he, I thought the music was so good, and not knowing anything about that it was one person, you know, you thinking it was a band with just a front man. I was into it completely. And then I remember Trilogy, I saw him at the Hollywood Forever Cemetery in a concert. Mm-hmm. Everyone knew about it, but it was just him performing, no opener, and this little outdoor. It was really cool. And then he came out with Kissland the next year. It just, he had never had a single on the radio. I was like, this guy is so good. Yeah. He's got an incredible voice. And then that song was kind of his bridge to the mainstream, because then the next year he had all those ones that came out on the radio. Can't Feel My Face, the 50 Shades of Grey song.
It's crazy that that
and I thought
was
it was a perfect
the first time
mix.
He became mainstream, because but he was like brewing for a while. You know what I mean? Like everyone, I feel like he was a part, like people played him at parties. Like he was someone you pulled up on your playlist to be like, oh, can I put something on?
Mm-hmm. And no, it definitely was like you were in on a secret.
Yeah. So when he finally came out with radio hits, I feel like in my mind, I was like, he'd been out for a while, but I guess he hadn't. It's really interesting.
Yeah. He really like, it's crazy. He like did this small tour. He was at Coachella and ended up having like a full house. All the shows were sold out. He was just playing in small rooms like the like 1500 cap theaters and stuff.
Yeah.
Excuse me. And he and then he was like opening for Florence and the Machine. He was doing these very specific things. And then when he came out with Kissland, dude was playing the Greek. That's like a 6900 5900 cap venue. And he had no radio play or anything. And that's an album, by the way, I thought when it came out was weak, and then in the recent years I've actually liked it more. But when that, I remember when Love Me Harder came out, I was like, this is a very good song, even though the lyrics about having such a big dick that it's gonna make it feel like you lost your virginity is so unappealing. That is like, he's like, I'll make it feel like the first time. I'm like, who the fuck wants it to feel like the first time ever again for the rest of your life?
I sang that as a karaoke song while I was in Hawaii. Should we play a little bit of it?
Yes, of course. Good opening.
What a sweet voice.
Wow.
God, what a good song. What a beautiful voice. I mean, but this one was so popular. This was my, I loved the song. I played it over and over, and I even started wearing pencil skirts.
I remember, like, I saw them perform it live together at, like, the Victoria's Secret show or something. It was, like, incredible. Yeah. Music video is awful. It's so bland. It's just, like, her singing.
Yeah, rolling around or
yeah,
whatever.
And there's, like, it cuts to, like, a desert, I think, at some point. I think that, by the way, she performed this live at the concert and then segued into Breathin', and it was like the most incredible combo. But I also think One Last Time is a really good song. That was, I think, the last single from the album.
Yeah, so then One Last Time came out. I feel like a lot of time passed between, because I think I had moved here to...
Yeah, that was a 20, that was a 2015 single, I think, because here's what I remember is that Problem was the first single.
Was it only on the deluxe?
No.
Okay, because One Last Time, I didn't
have
this
album. No, One
Last Time's
like the third song on there. It's like right after Problem, I think.
No, it is right after Problem, but I mean, I didn't have this album, so I didn't hear One Last Time till 2015 when I moved
right.
here.
Right, so I remember the single order was Problem, then Break Free, then Love Me Harder, and then that one. And what I remember, and so good, is there was a remix of What Do You Mean, the Justin Bieber song, that had her singing One Last Time over it. Look it up on YouTube. Okay. Highly recommend it. It's really...
They also had Bang Bang on this.
It's really good. Yeah, I think Bang Bang was a Jessie J song that...
Oh, maybe that's on the deluxe.
That's on the deluxe.
That's still like... Okay, so like all those, Break Free and Bang Bang, like whatever.
Break Free, I think, really grew on me. And when we saw her live, she almost closed with that. It was like her second or third to last song. The place went fucking nuts.
Because it's popular, and I hear it, and I'm like, okay, it's an upbeat song. But like you know where I live with Ariana is when she gets emo and
of course
singing about her heartbreak. I love One Last Time, but I also love Best Mistake. Gosh, okay. It's really between these two. I think One Last Time is my favorite. I want to play a little bit of it.
So good.
Yeah, I think that's my favorite.
I think it's, I mean, Best Mistake, both of them are very vulnerable songs about like fucking up in different ways. Best Mistake is kind of more like, you know, a relationship that you know is like bad for you, yeah. But you're gonna, you know.
That's almost like not even someone fucked up. It's almost like kind of bad idea-ish where you're like, I'm about to do something bad, but it feels so good.
Yep. And though I think it's a little more like... with Bad Idea, I think it's more of a, that's more about short term, whereas this is probably about someone.
Oh, yeah, this is
like
breakup, makeup.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I mean, also the fact that they dated is, I like when they collaborate. I like their collabs.
Yeah, oh, I thought their collabs
were
really
good. I don't think that relationship was super mature, but it was, you know.
It was very short term. I think it was like an 8-month relationship.
Yeah, but they did a lot of stuff together. It was a whirlwind. And Big Sean, I like where he's at now as an artist too. So it seemed like they both came out of that for the better. And
yeah. And she even like in the Thank You Next like flip book, she was like, you know, would hit it again or whatever.
Yeah. Can still get it. Is he still with Jhené Aiko?
That's a good question.
I mean, I liked his latest album. I feel like it got all like, you know,
I like the album that came out.
Something.
Yeah. Oh, totally. I thought his album, the one with, the one that,
Research is on.
Yeah, I thought that was a great album.
But that was like more, I feel like, got more machismo, like classic sort of like.
Oh, sure.
Posturing.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that song he wrote about, supposedly about Naya Rivera on there is wild. Oh,
that's a good album, but it is. But he totally changed his tone in his latest album because it's a lot more sort of like, I have used eucalyptus now and I use crystals.
Yeah.
I self care. And I'm like, all right, go off, Big Sean.
So, last one before we go, we're going to cover Dangerous Woman.
Okay. I know yours.
Yeah. Can you fire it up for me, actually? I just want that because my Spotify is acting up. Just literally play the song from the beginning because that'll just tell you what my favorite song is. I mean, look, if you listen to this pod, you know what it is, but let me know when you're ready. And
here we go. I'm ready.
All right, go for it.
You know that I'm greedy for love. Ow!
A classic double entendre.
Good line.
All right. Perfect song. Good. Perfect pop song, which apparently she had no... I looked at the like credits, and that's the Swedish people she works with, Max Martin, Savan, that team, produced it. I don't even think she wrote the song. I think they just wrote it, and she just tacked it on. But man, it really... It was that year, I think it was 2016, when Dangerous Woman came out, when Spotify put out their most listened to songs that year. That was my number one song.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great song, man. It holds up.
Yeah. It's very catchy, but it's also like, it's like the fun kind of codependent anthem.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like just being like like, you know, just a good jam. I don't know. Everything about it's just so perfect. It's like it's a good pop song in the sense that like it's not too fluffy for its own good. Like you don't feel like people worked on it in a lab.
Yeah.
And you also, it like showcases all her strengths in terms of her vocal range and her kind of sensibilities of like old school with new school stuff. It has like a real combination of that.
Yeah. Good pick. All right. Well, you know which one is my favorite.
Which is, by the way, my second favorite for what it's worth.
And I'm going to play it right now. Okay, wait. Ugh, so good. I
so
mean,
good.
That like breathiness, that I think I like that tempo where she's in. It just like that sort of emotional, you feel it in your stomach. Like
it is that longing. The sexiest song so she's sexy. Ever written. And then Lil Wayne shows up with his fucking yeah. verses and oh sexy as fuck. No, that song is like literally the like ultimate post-breakup flex.
And I love it because it's not real. Okay, so I was trying to think, why do I like the song so much? Because it's not just like, it's not like your classic like breakup Ciara song, which I also love, where you're like, you know, let's me and the girls are going to go out.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like a song that's like, yes, I just broke up. I'm going to be fine. But also, like, she's not just saying I'm going to go fuck someone. She's like, I'm going to go connect with someone.
Yeah.
That's what the song is about. It's about like connecting after a breakup. It's mm-hmm. not about like going out and rebounding or just getting fucked, because it's like, she's hot. Like we all, and also like, even if you're not hot, Craigslist exists. Like we all can go out and get fucked after a breakup. There's plenty of lonely people out there, but there's something different about being like, I am so sure of myself that I'm going to find a deep connection.
Yeah.
Again.
Well, also
that's cool to
when
me.
You are in like in a certain phase of your breakup period, occasionally it does happen where you just meet someone and it's like a great vibe. It of course is like salting a very specific wound, but in the sure. best way possible.
Well, that's what I mean, because there's something about this where it's like she didn't care, she's gonna go out and be with this person, but also it's kind of implying like this could be the next relationship, but it doesn't matter if it is. And that's yeah. what I like about it. It's not just about a rebound. And I'm trying to think, why do I think the song has that? She says good conversation. There's
yeah,
little,
yeah,
there's little
exactly.
hints there where it's like she's not just like, I can go out and get fucked. She's like, I can no, go out yeah, and connect.
Yeah, exactly.
On a deeper level.
It literally is like the perfect night across yes. the board. Fucking, talking, eating, hanging. All
yeah.
of it.
And I love that line he has was like, I'm triple X.
Triple X large. Yeah, that's one of the greatest lyrics so in the history of words being put together. I could not agree more. All right. Well, we did it. We covered yes. all the tracks. We'll be back next week with makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And oh, before, as we always mention at the end, we have stickers now.
Yes. We have stickers. You can see them on our Instagram pages at Larissa T, at Eli Oldsberg, or at Pod Is a Woman.
With two S's and Pod Is a Woman. And yeah, and you can reach out and buy them on there, and we'll send them to you directly. A few of you have already bought them. We love you. Thank
yeah.
you for buying.
They're
and
cute.
And then what else? I feel like is there anything else we got to cover? No, I think that's it, right?
I think that's it. Well, yeah, we might be doing a live show in the coming months, so
yes, I'm so glad you put that on record, so we manifest it.
Yeah, we're gonna manifest it. It's gonna happen. So if Teresa says she's gonna do something, she's gonna do it.
Yeah, same. Ditto on that. Ditto on the Eli front. And if when we know more details, it's obviously one thing we'll say is for now it'll just be in the LA area. If we can take it on the road, great. But it's gonna be in the LA area. It'll probably be late summer, early fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad we put that. Now we have to do it legally. And by podcast law.
Or you can arrest us.
Yes. Or you can call the podcast cops on us. And also listen to both of our podcasts. What's yours called?
Oh, yeah. You Can Tell Me Anything. It's a comedians confess secrets they've never told anyone before.
And I have one called Closure, the podcast that never ends, where we talk about major events or anything ongoing in your life that in our guests' lives and how they've dealt with it. So it ranges from personal stuff to family things, relationships, even job changes and like people who have like ongoing medical conditions and stuff. It's like you really learn a lot, and I love it so much. So, and Teresa's been on it.
Yes.
And I've also been on Teresa's. So you can listen to us spill our guts.
Yay.
Yeah. So thank you guys for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.